The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Morning, folks. Welcome in. It is a numbers game here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel, filling in for Gil today. He will be back tomorrow. He returned from the vacation. We do have a good show, though. Paul Sporer is going to be with us in 30 minutes to go over what was a wild weekend in Major League Baseball. A lot of series that had a lot of impact in the wild card races in their respective leagues. And at the bottom of the hour, Wes Reynolds will be with us as well as we discuss everything. I think 8:45 p.m. Pacific time, correct? Or a.m. Pacific time. Wes will be with us to recap the Open Championship. And with that, we get into what happened over the weekend, and that's exactly what happened. Brian Harman dominated. It was a very boring Open Championship, unless you had some stuff to sweat out throughout, you know, top 20s matchups, whatever it was. But in terms of the outright markets and the outright winner, no real, like, I don't know, no real moments of consequence after, I argue, Kelly, the second round. I keep going back to that eagle on 18, where Harman, you know, he eagles that. He goes to 10 under par going into round three and just distanced himself enough to where guys were going to have to get aggressive to try to catch up with him. Ultimately, they couldn't do it. The weather helped them out in some regard as well, because it wasn't really like a ton of scoring opportunities for guys throughout the weekend. We had some big ones. You know, John Rahm had a 63 in round three. You know, had some decent performances, but nobody did enough to catch up with Harman because of that 65 he shot in round two. And ultimately, just good golf all the way around. So nothing really to sweat out. Can we play this, though? So I was listening. I'm glad you caught this, because I didn't catch this until I was listening to Sports Talk Radio on the way in. So Harman was asked about, like, the motivation to win this thing. I would say millions of dollars would be a pretty good motivation, and also a major, right? But he was asked about the motivation to win this, and he cited a fan on the course during his final round.
After I made the second bogey yesterday, a guy, when I was passing him, he said, "Harman, you don't have the stones for this." That helped.
That was the motivation?
Yeah, that helped a lot. I think he was a... anyway, that helped. I mean, it just helped snap me back in, like, you know, I'm good enough to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go through my process, and the next shot's going to be good.
And it was, by the way. After the second bogey, he birdied the next two. So if that really did help. By the way, can I say, I always love in moments like this when somebody who's talking pauses for, like, the reaction from the crowd but doesn't get it. Because he totally did that. He was totally like, "He told me I didn't have the stones for this." And, like, was quiet and was waiting for, like, the, "Ooh, yeah, Brian, you got him." It ultimately didn't happen. But kind of a boring tournament, right? Am I wrong in that?
I mean, look, it was a boring weekend. There's no doubt. I don't think there's any other way to put that. Hey, betting-wise, like, I was sweating a ton at 6 a.m. yesterday. Like you said, if you're betting top 20s and stuff like that, that was a big-time sweat. I also think it's another one when we talk about these networks coverage where they need to buy into some of that stuff more. Like, yesterday's entire coverage was, it's Harman and then, like, the six guys chasing – quote-unquote chasing him that are, like, six shots back. And I'm like, can we show some other guys here? Like, let me know when someone's within three, four shots. You know what I mean?
Golf, I think, would benefit the most of their broadcasts of buying a lot more into sports betting stuff.
Yes.
You know what I mean? If we're talking about, like, tournament matchups that were coming down to the wire in the final round, tracking those, like, pitting those two guys next to one another. Like, could you imagine having, like, a side-by-side? Like, you know, so, like, for our draft, right, I had Xander Schauffele over Ricky Fowler. You imagine, like, a side-by-side dual camera if, like, they're both on the, like, you know, on a tee at the same time or whatever it is, and, like, doing something like that. Like, they, at the very least, and here's the thing, Kelly, they don't even need to really, like, buy into it fully. Be like, Xander's a minus 120. But if you're, like, part of the production crew, like, you know, humor me for a second, go to, like, one of the sports books websites and look at some of the matchups and be like, okay, there's going to be people that are watching this. Let's just show those guys a little bit more often. Right. When we go from golfer to golfer, let's go from, again, rolling with this, like, matchup. Let's go from Xander Schauffele to Ricky Fowler. Right. Let's do this to keep people more interested in it, because there are people who are watching for different reasons.
Yeah.
And there's also fantasy golf, too. It's not as famous or as popular, but there's still something there, too. Like, you just have to have, I think, a little bit more insight, because, like you said, I thought you brought up a brilliant point the other day. And I had actually never realized this until watching this Open Championship after you made this point, which is they drive their broadcast so much toward narrative. You know what I mean? So, like, there's so much there where you're like, no, I want to watch golf. I want to watch what these other guys are doing. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't want to buy in 100%, I think they would benefit from it.
Yeah, it's the I completely agree with you. Look, I got a million different ideas for what I think that final round could look like with different things. But the problem is I'm not even confident how quickly it's going to take for us to get there when we're talking about a sport who's still – they're still ashamed to talk about the money involved, which I'd never understood. I know everybody brings this up, but talk about yesterday. Make a bigger deal about how the six guys chasing Harmon, like, there's a $500,000 difference between what Jason Day, Tom Kim, Sepp Straka, and John Rahm made over Rory, Griot, Young, and Sharma, who were all one stroke behind them. Like, that's a big freaking deal. And people at home, like, probably would think that's a big deal too, I would think, but they never want to talk about that stuff because I don't know, it's too lowbrow or something like that. But congratulations to Brian Harmon. He's a guy, that guy who said that to him on whatever hole it was,
right?
He said the thing we were all thinking at the time, and Brian Harmon went out and proved everybody wrong. Like, this is a PGA Tour journeyman who's won two times on the PGA Tour, who's always been a good golfer, but nobody's ever put Brian Harmon in the class of great golfers on the tour. And that guy went out there and for 3 days held a lead and never, but outside of those two bogeys, never even gave anybody a chance, a hope of catching back into that thing. I thought Rahm talking after his round yesterday was big too, where he was like, he's getting all these questions about what could he have done? What could everybody else do? Like, look, the guy was six shots ahead of us.
Right.
Nobody could have done anything. Like, what are you talking about?
Yep. And Harmon, too, I will say, like, both round three and round four, he did start two over. You know, like, there was, in both rounds, there's thoughts of like, oh, okay, maybe this is it. Like, maybe he's going to start to falter. I think at one point the closest the gap got was he 9 under and Fleetwood was 6 under? If I remember correctly.
I think it was when Rahm got to 7.
Okay.
I think Rahm was 7 in the clubhouse, and Harmon bogeyed those first two.
There we go.
And
so he got to, like, 9. And so they, and then you're sitting there like, oh, okay, maybe we got something here. And then, of course, the rest of the way, nope, like, we're just going to, especially, like, the third round, you know, I talk about the end of the second round, but after starting two over, what does he do? He birdies 4, you know, he birdies 5, 9, 12, 13, never bogeys, pars out the rest of them. Like, that's what it takes sometimes. Like, that's all you got to do is play some even-keeled golf, and it's the same thing. After round four, you bogey the 2 and 5, and you're like, okay, here we go. And then the clown and the clown rooting goes, you don't have the stones for it, and then you birdie the next two, and then you're ultimately going to be fine the rest of the way. So it's a claret jug? Is that what it is?
Oh, the claret jug, yeah. He took it down to the one of the local pubs, and as is tradition, I think was drinking some brewskis out of that last night.
So is that a thing? Like, you have to go down there and chug out of it?
Yeah, oh, yeah, totally, yeah. The claret jug, yeah, it's drinking anything anywhere. So, yeah, this was at a local pub, I believe. At Hickory Smokehouse, West Kirby, wherever that is. Sounds very English, though.
Not since Martin Slumber have I heard a more British term.
Oh, yeah. And then, I mean, I guess the side story of this tournament, which is, I think leaving a lot of people scratching their head today, is I'm trying to figure out if, like, half the questions he was asked in the press conference were about his hunting hobbies. And which apparently there's a great fascination of in England, where I don't know, apparently they just don't hunt, or they like fox hunt and that's it or whatever. But they were obsessed with Brian Harmon's hobby of hunting. And that was like half the questions he got. And there are some English papers this morning that were really, really keying in on that.
Really?
About kind of hinting at the disgusting act of us Americans and the hunting activities that some of us may partake in.
Not as classy as the fox hunt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Apparently you need, horses and dogs and fancy coats or something for hunting to be hunting.
Do they hunt the foxes? Or is, like, I feel like the fox is like a
companion. They let a fox run and then the dogs, like, run them down.
Wow, that's terrifying for the fox.
Yes.
I thought they, like, used foxes as, like, a tool in the hunt. Like,
no,
you know what I mean? They were side by side with the foxes going, wow, that's terrible.
It's very odd. I don't really get it.
Now I'm having like some sort of existential crisis. Can you imagine? Go, run.
Like, it's terrifying. Oh yes, yes.
It's like, what's the greatest hunt or whatever? Like, the greatest game or what?
You hunt a man?
Yeah. That's terrible. Just go run on this island. Trust me, we'll find you. Really quick, we're going to get to more of this a little bit later, but did want to note, one of the big notes as we transition over to the National Football League from over the weekend is that Jimmy Garoppolo, Las Vegas Raiders quarterback, passed his physical He is not going to start on the PUP list. That's a really big deal because that was a massive question for a Raiders team that, as Kelly and I have mentioned, and I think a lot of people echo these sentiments, is one, as I've used the term, hanging on a razor's edge. Their quarterback depth chart is not very good. And if Jimmy Garoppolo is in any danger of missing some sort of time, that's going to be something that would really hold this team back because defensively there's some real questions, especially in that secondary and, of course, behind him. So not on the PUP list, Jimmy Garoppolo. It's a really big win for the Las Vegas Raiders. We'll see as we move forward, of course, how that's going to help and how long he's going to be available. That's the other thing. Jimmy Garoppolo does have a history of missing time. But at least for them, Kelly, a very, very big move, the fact that he was able to pass the physical. And to give them credit, I mean, a lot of people, especially some Raiders mouthpieces out there, were like, so big deal. Don't worry about it. It's fine. You know, even though we had to delay the press conference because we had to rework the contract because there was something wrong with the foot, no big deal. At least right now, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm only kind of laughing back here because you know how down I am on this team. Sure. But you're right. Like, this is a huge deal for them because I don't think Jimmy G's that good, but the depth, it's not like they've got someone really great sitting behind him.
Oh, man. When we come back, I forgot. I did the math. We gotta do our numbers game draft.
Oh yeah, we got the results. Yep.
Okay,
yep.
All right.
Wrinkle crunched the numbers. Yep.
He didn't crunch those chicken nuggets.
Those nuggets. <Yeah. laughs>
Crunch the numbers. Didn't crunch the.
Probably still 50 left over in the Veasan fridge if anybody wants them.
Ooh, actually 4 day old chicken nuggets, huh?
Yeah.
I might take a crack at it. Who knows? All right, we'll take our break. Coming up at 15, Paul Sporer is going to be with us again. We'll go over Major League Baseball from the weekend and some of the results. We're going to grade our draft as well. We have plenty enough to get to, and we continue our Group of Five previews throughout a numbers game today, too. So don't go anywhere. It is a numbers game. John Von Tobel filling in for Gil Alexander here on the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app at MGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. Stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. Start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms. Got to be 21 and in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, 1-800-522-4700. I do want to include everybody who wants to be part of the show. So if you want to tweet us, actually, if you want to X us at me, JVT. Right? That's what it is now, right? So if you want to X us at me, JVT, at Kelly Bidlin, remember K-E-L-L-E-Y, you know that. First off, from Phil, fox hunting, because we were talking about that, because you read me the excerpt that you were referring to in the paper. Do you want to read this?
Yeah. This is, and Kevin Van Valkenburg grabbed this. I know he tweeted this morning. This is where I caught it. But this is from The Guardian this morning. Quote, in one of the most bizarre major press conference departures of recent time, the 36-year-old explained his penchant for killing animals. He missed the cut at the Masters and immediately slaughtered a pig and a turkey. Quote, I've been a hunter for my entire life, he boasted. I enjoy the strategy of it. We eat a lot of wild meat at my house, so I enjoy butchering and I do a lot of hunting, end quote. Champions traditionally drink from the jug. One is left to ponder what on earth Harmon may do with the famous trophy.
Okay, so first off, I think it's somewhat unfairly written. It does make it seem like he got angry and went out in a rage to slaughter a pig and a turkey.
Yeah, and we're inferring possibly that he's going to drink, like, animal blood out of the claret jug?
I don't know. Maybe just
that's what that last line is?
Maybe it's just gravy and they just don't like it? I don't know. I mean, who was it? There was an Open champion who actually at one point did, like, return the claret jug with, like, dried chunks of gravy in it. If I remember correctly, it was one of the older guys who won the claret jug. Just look up claret jug gravy. Okay. Yeah, find this out. But we bring that up because Phil tweeted in, you know, you brought up fox hunting and what it is in terms of just releasing fox and everything over in England. And Phil checks in and says, fox hunting is despised by most sane people over here for what it's worth. That's sort of the problem in terms of how it's represented, as that's all people over here would see as hunting. And there's no culture of the type of hunting Harmon does here. So weird dynamic either way, like, you know. An odd piece to be written about one Brian Harmon and referring to maybe he's drinking animal blood out of the claret jug. Who knows?
Yeah, the way I took it is, I don't know if I'm apparently the fine people of England are very fascinating with hunting in the U.S. And I didn't realize that hunting in the U.S. was, I would have guessed it's kind of a foreign concept to a lot of people, but like I didn't know it was this foreign of a concept.
Yeah. And they also, David checks in. The problem with stories like Harmon's is we only hear them when the guy wins. Hey, Harmon, how many times in the last 10 years has someone told you you were going to choke and you choked? I'm thinking a lot.
I chuckled at.
I was going to say, that is a funny tweet. I would also, if I was looking at it logically, like, well, how many times is he in position in a final round to do that?
Bigger thing, yeah, actually.
Maybe it's true that this is, like, one of the first times, but, like, I do laugh at, like, the thought of, like, Harmon being, like, told, you can't do it, buddy. He's like, I'm going to do it. And then, like, bogeys immediately, like, the next hole. Like, that is kind of funny. So you'll find humor in it.
Yeah, you never know. Harmon might have stretched the truth of when he got dropped that quote. Maybe it was after bogey won, and then he went out and bogeyed two.
If it even wasn't that? What if he, like, misconstrued it or, like, didn't hear it properly? You know, it's super windy, and, like, somebody's like, you totally got the stones for this man. But he misheard it, and you don't have the stones. And so the guy's listening to that press conference. He's like, I was just trying to pay you a compliment, dude. He was, like, actually the number one Brian Harmon fan out there. Can you imagine?
Oh, man.
That'd be good.
Congrats to anybody that had Harmon tickets out there. I mean, that is – look, he had been playing a lot better golf recently. His putting was a problem earlier in the year. He kind of found something in the final round of the U.S. Open. Had been playing really well since then. But that was a massive dog cashing in a major – and wasn't even on my radar, JVT. Wasn't even on my radar.
All right, really quickly, before we move on to the Major League Baseball trade deadline markets, I win?
You won, buddy.
I won?
You won.
There we go. We had our numbers game golf draft, which we selected a bunch. I think what ultimately helped me, you said that Isaiah crunched the numbers. I did too. I assumed, you know, bets either to win 100 at minus prices or, you know, of course, $100 bets at plus prices. The thing that got me over the edge, Hideki Matsuyama, top 20 plus 190. That ultimately made the difference. That was a pretty good price to hit.
Yeah, my two big long shots I swung for the fence on didn't get there. You were good.
There we go.
Well done, JVT. Well done.
Hey, man.
This is a good example, though, pretty much how my card was, because that was Tyrrell Hatton, Tommy Fleetwood, top 20s were two of my bigger bets, and then Cameron Smith, not top 20, was one of my biggest bets.
Well, and I have to say, too, I mean, to be quite honest, like, it's also a good example of anybody like me who I'll check in at a major, really just bet, like, outrights, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. Like, if you really do it, like,
this is what
you're supposed to really be doing.
Yeah.
You know, I like to just check in and put some small tickets on some outrights and see if I can hit them. But for the most part, like, this is what, if you're really seriously doing these sort of things, small wagers on the outrights,
yep.
But you're really hammering some of these markets because that's where you can find the
real profit. That's how you sustain a bankroll throughout the whole season. Because otherwise, yes, if you're just betting outrights, it's going to dry up real quick.
All right, so with that, we have markets over at DraftKings for players to be traded. Now, these are all phrased properly in terms of, like, for Shohei Ohtani, for example, first pitch or first at bat. And finally, thank you. I hadn't seen these updated. I was going in fresh because we were watching these. And what did I tell you when we first brought this up? This opened up at minus 170 in favor of the Angels retaining Shohei Ohtani. And I thought that was ludicrous. And where are we at now?
300.
Yep. Makes all the sense in the world. And I would argue it should be higher. I think you can make a legitimate argument that minus 300, this thing should be higher than what it is right now.
Yeah, I even asked you the other day, what was your cutoff point? You said 350.
Right. Like, that was the thing. Like, if you look at every bit of information, if you look at just where these teams are at, everything that's going on, like, it doesn't make any sense at all that you would make this minus 170 at all.
Yeah.
So the market is getting this right and driving this thing up. And if you look at the teams, like, for example, the other thing I threw out to you, Kelly, is, like, let's take the Dodgers, for example. The Dodgers have the assets to go and acquire him. But there's two things. One, the Dodgers, rightfully so, are the favorite to land him when he's a free agent because they can just go, hey, man, stay in the city. Just play with us. We'll give you all the money you want, and we're going to be a lot better. And teams like, you know, others like the Yankees, all that kind of stuff, like, they can ship off for a rental, but it's not going to make sense because I don't think he wants to go play on the East Coast. Like, none of it would make sense. It just makes sense for this team that is now only three and a half games out of a wild card with a bunch of AL East teams in front of them that are going to beat up on one another, that they just maintain and go, you know what, let's try to make a push here. And they got three games against Detroit coming up in a couple of days. They also have, of course, a series at this weekend right before the trade deadline with Toronto. They can really carve out, if they perform well, they can carve themselves out a nice hole to dig out of, like, when it comes to this wild card race. Like, I don't think they're done by any stretch. Why would they trade them?
Yeah, I think the other big thing here is, I mean, whenever these next team markets becomes far more common now, right? And we've seen them in baseball, NBA, NFL, all this sports. And I always think whenever we talk about these, it's like, what's the other team Like, where's the other team that's really being linked, right? And it's right now it just feels like it's several teams that would be interested. But we haven't seen one team that it's like, okay, they're the front runners in this, right?
Sure. By the way, the absolutely real Mitch Moss just sent me a DM. Had Brian Harmon.
Oh, nice. There you go.
It was our friend. General Bad Pete Moss.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, see, congratulations, Mitchie. There you go.
Bang.
Yeah, I'm always happy for people like that. So the other ones is pretty fascinating when you're looking around at some of these markets. So one of the cases that I made, I got to talk to Adam Burke yesterday. It's one thing that I brought up to you, and he added a nugget to this. Do we have Stroman? Because one of the things that I brought up to him was, hey, look, I've read reports that Marcus Stroman is a target of the San Francisco Giants. That if you actually look around, you can find, and look, at this point right now, you don't see them listed on the teams in our graphic. Our graphics people just missed out on it because he is 12-1. So he's right there at the bottom of the list. But I bring that up because, one, I've read reports that Stroman and the Giants are linked together. And the other nugget, which Burke brought up, which I thought was a brilliant point to add to it, Kelly, is the fact that the Giants love themselves some ground ball pitchers. Like, if you look at the way that they have constructed their pitching staff, it's what they want out of their guys. And Stroman fits perfectly with what they want to do in terms of their identity as their pitching staff. So he slots in there. There's been reports that are there. If you're taking shots and wondering where you might go with it, it would be really interesting to take, I think, a flyer if you had something available, a small bet on the San Francisco Giants at 12-1 to land Marcus Stroman. It does make all the sense in the world that it would be the Rangers at the top because they desperately need pitching help. And by the way, that pitching help is starting to come crashing back down to earth. Dane Dunning, as we talked about over the weekend, had all the signs of a regression and got his face beat in by the Los Angeles Dodgers. That pitching staff as a whole was knocked around by LA in the first two games. The Rangers have some real questions coming out of that series to ask themselves. The tricky part, though, is Stroman is also one of those, we'll call them regression candidates, where his expected numbers are higher than his actual numbers. So it would be the worst thing in the world if the Rangers got Marcus Stroman and then he regressed, much like all the other guys that they have, right, and that falls apart. But I thought at 12-1 for a team like Stroman and the San Francisco Giants made a lot of sense, a ton of sense.
Yeah, I like it.
And then you have other pot like Giolito. These are all information-based, I would think. Like, I'm really fascinated. I haven't seen any of the reports about, Giolito. The Dodgers are plus 230. I'm really interested in what the Dodgers are going to do at all at this point right now. Like, they have the assets to go and acquire pitching if they so choose. But they also didn't really address the pitching staff as a whole in the offseason because I think they're making moves to get ready to sign Shohei Ohtani. So does that mean they're going to be super aggressive at the deadline? Not sure if that's the case, but not specifically for Giolito, but Baltimore in general, man, look out for them. We got to talk about that later because if you're gambling on a team to make some moves at the trade deadline, Baltimore's at the top of the list.
Let's go out.
Because they can, I think, win this American League. There's nobody that should scare them at this point. All right, let's take a break. Let's ask Paul Sporer about that. When we come back, let's ask Paul about the aggression of the Baltimore Orioles at the trade deadline and whether or not that's going to be a thing.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Attention, BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $100 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account. Click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM. And once your friend signs up, makes a deposit, they're going to receive a $100 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $100 bonus as well. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. BetMGM.com for terms. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 30 days. Gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Massachusetts, Mississippi, and Nevada. You know it doesn't expire? Friendship.
Okay.
it's probably very untrue. I think friendship expires all the time. As I noted, hey, I've had a lot of fun filling in for Gil, so if you want to get in on part of the show, absolutely do it. X me.
X us.
Yep, at me, JVT. Jesse Welch checks in. I would like to be a part of the show. That's all he tweeted. That's all he X'd. So there you go. You're part of the show. Congratulations, Jesse. All right, let's welcome in Paul Sporer. You can follow him on X at Paul Sporer. Paul, how's it going, man? I haven't talked to you for a while. Hope you're doing well. I'm going to pose a question to you that I was asking right before we came out, which is, I've kind of been making the case that if I was to gamble on a team being aggressive at the deadline, and what I mean gamble is bet them to win their conference league or bet them to maybe win the World Series, For me, it would be Baltimore. Am I right in thinking that? Because, like, Baltimore has the assets to go and acquire it. I think they have the motivation to do it, especially coming out of a series like that against Tampa Bay Rays. I think you look around the American League and think, why should we be scared of anybody at this point? And we can add to our team that already has, what, 61 wins. Am I right in thinking, like, now's kind of the time to buy on Baltimore because they might be one of the buyers at the deadline?
I completely agree. I think they have every reason to stay aggressive here. They've kind of, you know, paid some dues by being decent last year, but not really getting over the hump. They didn't overdo it last year. You know, you look at like a team like Cincinnati or even Miami, they're kind of in that position this year where it's like, do they go for it? That's not the question this year for Baltimore. They're in first. They just did really well in Tampa Bay. It's time to push in. They can give up a big chip or two from their prospect pool without even harming the Major League ball club. That's the impressive part with the stock that they've built. So, yes, I love that call out on Baltimore.
All right. Outside of that, the team that they just took out in 3 out of 4 games, and I think they've lost, I think, is it 6 out of 7, whatever it is for the Tampa Bay Rays now. I'll just ask a general question. What's the deal? Like, what's going on with Tampa Bay? What's happening with them? Do you think this is something legitimate? Or, hey, injuries, rough stretch, they're going to even out and be somewhat like the team we saw at the beginning of the year.
It is legitimate, but for a reason that you mentioned, which is the injuries. You simply cannot just give up an ace every 6 weeks the way they kind of have. You know, Rasmussen springs out for the year. McClanahan did miss time. He's back now, so that's great. They didn't have Glasnow all year. Eflin's been the mainstay steady guy. Taj Bradley's been up and down. They just don't have enough pitching. The interesting thing is I'm not sure that they have enough to stay at the highest level. I like McClanahan, Eflin, Glasnow, Bradley as a 4 right now, but that's frail, right? If anybody's down from that, who do they go to next? They even moved on from Yonny Chirinos. So even though they are hemorrhaging pitching and things have been problematic there, they even thought that he wasn't good enough to stick around. Atlanta scooped him up. They will make moves, but generally we see their moves work on the fringes. So I don't see the Rays like really pushing hard. They're going to have to fight for this, and they're going to have to fight for a playoff spot too. As great as they started the season, there's a world where they don't make the playoffs. I don't think that's the world that we live in, but it's not out of the realm of possibilities given where they're at right now.
All right, let's stay in the division because it is a fascinating one, and it's a fascinating week here for the Toronto Blue Jays. They get 3 games at home, or excuse me, on the road against the Los Angeles Dodgers, and after a day off, they come back home to host the Anaheim Angels. So what do we make of Toronto? Because you lose this series to Seattle. It's somewhat big, right? Because Seattle, of course, in the wild card chase, so you lose that series for them. But overall, if I talk to a lot of people, right, in terms of the American League, and if, like, there's a dark horse, Toronto keeps coming up in a lot of these conversations for me. So where do you put Toronto? Are they worth looking at here, whether it be American League, World Series? Will they be a buyer at the deadline after what the next 6 games are huge? Because this Dodgers team just wrecked the Texas Rangers, looked really good, and the Angels are fighting for dear life and trying to do anything to keep Ohtani at least around. So what do you make of the Blue Jays in this week that they're entering right now?
Yeah, the LA double dip, while both aren't in California, like you said, they host the Angels this weekend. But playing those two teams back-to-back is not going to be easy. The Dodgers are playing very well, and the Angels have taken a hit since losing Trout, but they're still a pretty good offense. So the Jays will not take them lightly. They've bought a bunch in the last years, so they have depleted their system a bit, but I don't know how you take your foot off the gas this year. This team is still very much in contention. Great ball club at 55 and 45. A lot of talent that's working right now. Manoah kind of getting back, so that's nice. Maybe they don't have to go for a huge starter. Maybe they get something to supplement the rotation, but I do think they need some more bullpen. Maybe they could shore up with a bat here or there, although I think they're pretty much covered there. But I don't know how Toronto would give up. I like this ball club. They have a ton of talent. They got to keep pushing forward. I think they should go out and get a couple pieces. Doesn't have to be a huge one, but just 2-3 pieces on the fringes, a starter, a reliever, a bench bat. 3 pieces like that could make all the difference for Toronto.
So generally, because with this conversation, I feel like we're kind of setting up is, like, the American League's wide open, right? Like, if you're looking around and looking at the American League at this point right now, I think you're probably looking a little bit further down the board. So, like, you know, for example, Paul, like, I've got a ticket that I bet 2.5 months ago on Texas to win the World Series. However, I don't feel crazy confident given the pitching and what's been going on with them. Dane Dunning finally fell back down to earth the other day for Texas. Yeah. And I actually kind of worried. I brought this up with Kelly. So, like, they're favored right now to go get Marcus Stroman. Well, Stroman's actually kind of a regression candidate if you look at some of the metrics. So they could go buy at the deadline, but buy the wrong guy. So, like, when we look at the American League overall, it seems like a very fragile league in that I think there's a lot of teams in there's that range from, like, 8 to, like, 12, you know, whatever it is, that have some upper mobility here and can make some noise in this American League. Is there a cutoff point, do you think, here in the American League where we stand?
I completely agree with that. I think the cutoff point is going from the Guardians to the Tigers there in that wild card race. That's a 4-game split. I still don't want to bury this Guardians ball club. The offense got going for a while. It's kind of come back to earth again, and they're back under 500. They have enough talent. It's probably the Mariners, but I'm keeping the Guardians in just because they've got so much pitching and they have enough hitting that they can stay in this too. And the Mariners are just a game ahead of them. I like the Mariners a good bit better, despite only being a game split between those two teams. And I also don't trust the Guardians to be aggressive there, but that's probably the cutoff, that Mariners Guardians area in the AL. But that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams deep into the wild card. And I like any of those teams along with the division leaders that could actually make noise in the American League. I totally agree with you that it's so wide open this year.
All right, let's flip it to the National League. So my theme since I've been filling in with Gil and doing the weekend stuff has been asking folks in the National League, what team outside of the playoff picture do you have faith here that can make it in and do you think can make a run and worth betting at a plus price? The same team has come up every single person I've asked, so I'm wondering if you're going to have the same team as well.
Oh, interesting. I mean, I know the Padres are talking about selling, so if they do that, it's definitely not them.
It was the Padres, by the way. It was the Padres. Okay, every person we've asked. And it's been, Kelly's laughing because, Paul, every person we've asked, it's been like overwhelming confidence.
Yes.
Like, it's like, they're going to make a run. And I'm like, I get it. Like, I get the talent on paper, but they're 6 games out.
Exactly. I will say, though, one of the things we do as a baseball community sometimes is overrate deficits at certain points of the year. I think even 10 right now is not a crazy deficit. That's why I still can't bury the Cardinals, even though they've come back too. They hit a little run. Now they've lost 3 straight. But 6 is not a crazy deficit. That's a hot week from you and a mediocre to bad week from some of your opponents there. So I get why people gravitate toward that right away. I've had a hard time burying the Padres as well. I think the Marlins still give me some intrigue, though. I know the offense is underwhelming. They could get one more bat to kind of get going with Soler. 2 big bats and then a bunch of kind of fringe with the pitching. I like what they could do. I get why people go to the Padres, but I'll be a little bit different and go Marlins there just because I believe in teams that live off of pitching. That's why I couldn't bury Cleveland either.
All right, I like it. So then last 90 seconds here, it does seem like, so the vibes around San Diego seem somewhat like positive, right? Like, hey, they could still make a run. And you look at the record, yeah, 4 games under, but a plus 52 run differential. It makes sense. The same is not being said for the Mets. Do you think they're selling off at the deadline? Because there's rumors, of course, that Verlander's getting asked about. What do you think of Mets, the Metropolitans, what their future holds?
I think they gotta. There's so many teams, too. And I know the Padres are only one team ahead of them, so that same concept would apply, the teams in between them. But they're so old, too, and they've just been so underwhelming. You mentioned the two different vibes, minus 17 run differential versus plus 52. That's the big difference between those ball clubs, even though they're a game and a half split. I think the Mets should sell off some pieces. I think the Padres should actually consider buying, even though they bought a lot in recent years and their system is depleted, because I do agree that they have a chance to make a huge surge. The Mets, it wouldn't surprise me if it happened just because they do have a huge collection of talent, but they should sell and kind of pack it in for next year.
All right, man. We'll get you out of here. What's going on Twitch? You still going on? You still playing the show?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah, playing a lot of out-of-the-park baseball. Not as much the show this year, not because the show's bad, but just because of time. And I'm rerunning Doc Gooden and Daryl Strawberry's career with the Mets and, you know, No side of off the field activities for them. So I'm rerunning their careers, and they're on the Hall of Fame track that they should be as we enter 1988.
Love it, man. Thanks a lot, man. It's good to talk to you.
Take care, guys.
Follow him on X at Sporer. We got to fix that lower third.
Yeah, we got to fix that lower third.
Follow Paul on X at Sporer. All right, second hour of a numbers game coming at you next year on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We got a lot left in the final 60 minutes.